got an email one night. I think it was like 5:45. I'm in my kitchen with three kids and my wife. I remember the sound being on my phone and I got a ding. I picked the phone up and it was from Blake Thompson. It's a forward. And he goes, FYI. And that's all he said. So I didn't think anything of it. And then I scrolled down and it's an email from Dave to Blake going, see if Coleman wants to do it. I think he'll do fine. But if the show flames, we can throw it to a best of really quick. So it was like he trusted me, but he also allowed for the potential that I might wreck the plane.
Welcome to the Voices of Freedom podcast, where we sit down with the voices behind the scenes at Freedom 95. And now your host, Jeremy Butel.
Thanks for joining us. You've likely heard today's guest on the Dave Ramsey Show as a guest host. Ken Coleman is a Ramsey personality, now a best-selling author. He has a couple books out. His latest is the best-selling Proximity Principle. Stay tuned during today's episode to find out how you can win an autographed copy of Ken's new book. You can also hear the Ken Coleman Show late nights and some weekend slots on Freedom 95. We took a visit to Nashville to Ken's own studio, the brand new studio, to record this one. I hope you enjoy. Thanks for listening.
So the first time I met you, it was in New York City.
Yeah.
At the Business Gets Personal event. You were the MC.
Kidding. That's
that
right.
Was my introduction to Ken Coleman.
No kidding.
Little did I know there was a sleeping giant just waiting to emerge, to be unleashed upon the world as a Ramsey personality.
Yeah.
So I need to back up because we sat by each other at lunch. I don't know if you're going to remember this. There wasn't time for our lunch.
I do remember that.
And it was a crisis mode.
It was.
What do we do? Just eat our salad and go?
I remember that. We were in the back room of that restaurant. It's all coming back to me.
Yeah.
And Dave was a little bit like, oh my gosh, the food's not out. We had to hurry because everybody had to get back to the program. And I was the MC, so I had even had less time than Dave.
Right. I remember you saying
that. In fact,
that,
I remember leaving early before everybody else left.
Yeah, you had to be back in there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'll take you back to that time.
Okay.
I give you a blank sheet of paper.
Okay.
And you draw up your dream job. You write up your dream job. How close is it to what you're doing right now?
It's 99%. 99%. In fact, it's really 100, but I say 99 because I'm going, you know, I do want to do TV as well. And there are some preliminary discussions that are happening that could make that happen.
It feels like a TV.
Well, yeah,
studio,
you're right. Well, we're going to be launching on YouTube soon.
Yeah.
We're going to be doing the show live on YouTube.
Nice.
So I guess you could call that TV, but yeah, it's absolutely the dream job.
So in that, isn't it a little bit meta where your dream job is helping people find their dream job?
That's right.
And that's your dream job.
It always was. Yeah. Because I was always a very, on purpose kid. You know, I was 12 and 13 and dreaming really, really specific dreams. At the time I thought it was politics. But public service, certainly on a public stage. You know, I always enjoyed performing. You know, I was in my first play when I was 5, played a newspaper boy. Always enjoyed performing in that context, you know. So either plays or hosting assemblies at school, you know, I was always willing to get on the mic. I was just always that kid. Always felt like, you know, speaking. I enjoyed speaking. I always thought like I was going to communicate publicly to serve the public. And that's all I knew at 13, 14. But I really knew it. But I thought it was politics. And, of course, that changed. But I've just always been driven towards that. And so as I moved on into my life and I was so driven to make sure that I figured out my unique role on this planet, that when it all came so clear that broadcasting was it was like, hey, I want to broadcast to help people get what I get, which is really is a responsibility for me to be me, not what my dad wanted me to be, or my mom, or my grandmother, or my pastor, or my school teachers, or my friends. Just like, what am I supposed to do with my life? I only got one shot, and it goes really fast. So that desire to figure that out for me ended up, without me realizing it, my abiding passion.
It's good. I'll skip ahead because you kind of took us there. You refer to the 12-year-old Ken Coleman.
Yeah.
I've got a 13-year-old niece.
Yeah.
Ambitious as anyone you've ever met.
Oh, yeah.
Entrepreneur in the making.
Yeah.
How would you take the proximity principle, and we'll talk about the book a little bit later, but yeah. how would you dress it up for a 13-year-old?
Yeah. I'd ask her right now what she wants to do right now, and I wouldn't put pressure on her to be absolutely certain. I'd say you're 13. What's your 13-year-old answer? What are you interested in right now? What would you love to do? Who would you love to hang out with all day long? Somebody that you really admire. All right? I'd start with that. And I know that I could get her to say that. And it's not pressure-filled. And let's say that she knows. Does she know? Does she have an idea, an inkling? Who does she admire? Let's play it out, actually. What do you know? Does she know? Do we know? Oh, mom's over here. Oh, this is great radio. Do you know what it is? If she would give me that answer right now, what would she say? She wants to be Dave Ramsey.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's even more sweet and ironic. Okay, so we could say radio, right? To help people. She wants to be Dave Ramsey. Okay, so what do you tell a 13-year-old kid who goes, I think I want to be Dave Ramsey when I grow up? So you say, all right, why? And just push him a little bit. What about Dave Ramsey makes him the answer to that question? And just get them to reveal in their 13-year-old words what that is. And the reason why that's the next step is because A, you want them to hear themselves say the why, even at 13, and it might change, but you want to hear them say it. And then you need to be able to, as a mom and as an uncle, you need to be able to record that and know, okay, that's her why. Because what you will find is she may change her mind on that. But I will tell you that if she still stays with it, she steps into her sweet spot, she'll be able to look back at that answer, and there will be a very clear tie to that. There will be a thread, if you will. So, for instance, 12-year-old Ken Coleman, so I'm watching Ronald Reagan speak on television, doing homework on the floor, sitting up against the couch. My dad's sitting there, and he's watching Reagan, and he's a big Reagan fan. And so I'm watching this guy give a speech, and I'm 12. And something about the speech makes me look up. And he's talking about, I'll never forget, I don't remember the speech, but he's talking about America as a shining city on a hill. I'll never forget that. And that was the one phrase that I remember from being 12. I'm 45. And there was something about him. There was something about national television, something about a higher call to Americans. There's something there that sparked something in me. And it was that moment that began my wheels kind of turning his politics it, and I fell in love with politics. So at 15, 16, 17, 18, each year, I was involved with a student government thing that was working with a local legislator. He was a member of the House of Delegates. His name's Randy Forbes. He went on to become a congressman. He is a congressman for Virginia's 4th District, I believe, right now. And so I was a part of his program, and I just could not get enough politics. And so there I thought, well, okay, I'm going to serve the public, and I'm going to run for Senate, and I might run for president. I mean, I'm like 16 thinking these things. But again, that's what I'd say to that 13-year-old, because if you look back at 12-year-old Ken Coleman, to tie all this in, yes, I moved away from politics, but now I'm a nationally syndicated radio host. I'm a best-selling author, and I speak to thousands. And so I am I'm serving the public. I'm just not doing it in politics.
Yeah.
So I think there's a theme there, and I think the 13-year-old needs to know that, and then she needs to. The final piece is she needs to then to begin to explore that. So then she's get her interning with radio station. Well, her uncle, he's got that. So I'd literally put her on the air too, whenever she can, whenever she's ready. I don't care if it's a traffic report, make a program for her to go, hey, we're doing a thing with local teens, and you can qualify to read a traffic and weather report.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you got your own studio.
Yeah.
What, I'll take you back to 2014, New York City.
Yeah.
Eating salad. What, had you advanced to that far in your mind?
No.
Were you a Ramsey personality in waiting?
Yeah.
You were.
Oh, yeah. I knew that. That was, it was not guaranteed, but it was discussed when I started. So that was the first year I started. In fact, I was with you. That's October, if we go back. I think it was October of 14.
October, yes.
That's right. And I had started in June 1 of 14.
And you had moved from Georgia?
Yeah, and I gave up the Ken Coleman show.
Yeah. What kind of show was that?
It was 5 to 7 p.m. And they had the news and traffic as a part, you know, in the show. I didn't do that. But I was just doing a positive show. So it was a true grab bag of positivity. So, and the short answer is, I would have guests on from all walks of life. Could be a parenting expert. Could be a nutrition expert. Could be a leadership expert. I mixed it up, but kind of in Ziegler's Wheel of Life, you know, some marriage, parenting, relationships, business, personal growth. And so it was meant to be something so different because I hadn't figured out this yet, what I'm doing now. So the idea was, is could I do something very different and will people listen to positive talk radio? Because I, you know, I'm not against political talk radio. In fact, Rush Limbaugh, I mean, to this day, I smoke cigars because of that guy. You know, I love Rush. But I'm tired of that personally. And I'm very conservative, but I'm just tired of political talk. And I just feel like it puts you in an environment where you're driving into work or you're driving home from work and you may already have been having a bad day in a bad place. And then you're hacked off because the person on the other side of the aisle is doing this. It's important, but I will tell you that, and you would agree with this, we don't need another political talker. Do we?
Podcast, but yeah, we could get into that.
We could. But my point is I knew that I wasn't going to be attractive to stations like you by going, hey, I've got a new angle on political talk.
I'm another screaming white guy.
Essentially, yes. And so that's what I decided to do, and it really worked. It was refreshing to people on their way home because I was giving them something practical. It wasn't a bunch of inspirational gibberish. And we took very few calls. And so it was a mix of me going over a relevant article, interviewing a guest, or I would do a rant.
Yeah. So for a while, the casual viewers knew you as the video channel host.
That's right.
And you did that well. You did that like that was your dream job.
At the time,
yeah. What was your mentality during that point?
That I needed to get good on camera, that I was good on a mic, and I was good in a live stage, but that I didn't have a lot of camera experience, direct to camera. And I think there's, if for anybody who wants to be a public communicator, I don't care what field, you just want to be good at speaking. I really recommend two things. Put yourself in a situation where you got to do a live radio segment, even if it's only one. Stare at 8 minutes and have to fill 8 minutes. Yeah. And have to start smooth and end smooth because they're going to commercial whether you're done or not. I think that's a wonderful, wonderful exercise on how to communicate. And then I think staring at a camera. Because if we're live right now and I'm the cameraman and I'm in your life, you're staring at a lens. There is no human interaction. Whereas when I'm looking at you right now, I've got facial reaction. I got energy, you know. When I'm speaking at a live event, I've got literally hundreds of people that I can make eye contact with. When you're on camera, you're staring at a emotionless window.
Yeah.
And that is a wonderful experience. And then the other piece was I had a IFB in my ear and my director is talking to me in my ear, giving me instructions while I'm talking. So I have to talk and he's going 10, 9, 8, or we got to spin. Hold on. We got to fill. And I'm still talking. Mm-hmm. So learning how to talk while someone's talking in your ear and not missing a beat, world class broadcasting experience. And so I was really excited to have that opportunity, not just because it positioned me to be what I am now, but because it made me better.
And what about being in this culture during that time? How did that shape you? How did that prep you for what you're doing?
Well, it starts with Dave.
Yeah.
He's an icon. He's a Hall of Famer. And there's a reason that he is. And so when you get to be really close with a guy like that, which I get to be, and just watch him do what he does, how he does it. Why does he do it that way? It's a masterclass. My professional development and growth is hyper. It's just hyper growth because I'm around Dave. This environment's amazing. And then the culture here is something like doesn't exist in many. I mean, we're talking like top 2% of companies in America have a culture like this where people are cared for, where there's a missional connection to everybody, whether you code or you greet people and answer phones out here in the lobby. Everybody's tied to the mission, and that's special.
Yeah. You're listening to the Voices of Freedom podcast with Ken Coleman. We'll get right back to the conversation in a moment, but first, your chance to win an autographed copy of Ken's book, The Proximity Principle.
Take notes now. Send an email with your name, mailing address, and the subject line Proximity Principle to giveaways at freedom95.us. Giveaways at freedom95.us. Again, your name, mailing address, the subject line Proximity Principle. Winners will be contacted by email. Good luck from Freedom 95. Now back to the podcast.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think you were the first person ever not named Dave Ramsey to sit in the Dave Ramsey chair.
Yeah, that's a special honor.
Flesh that out for me. What did that mean to you?
I don't know how to describe it other than the immense trust that Dave put in me, because the backstory makes it even cooler. The backstory, the way the whole thing went down, is that Rachel Cruz and Chris Hogan, Ramsey personalities, obviously Rachel's Dave's daughter, if you don't know that. And they've been personalities for multiple years and been on the show many times as guests. And one day they were at commercial break.
Yeah.
And Rachel made the comment, "This is so fun when we're all on together. We should, when Dave's out sometime, we should just host it, Hogan." And she was playfully just goofing off. Like, that's not something she wanted to do. Well, Dave thought it was a great idea, and he seized on it. And he was like, "That's a great idea." And then Rachel was like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa." Because it's one thing, as you know, to sit in the guest chair. It's another thing to drive the plane, fly the plane. And so what happened was Dave liked the idea, but then when he expressed that, Rachel and Hogan both expressed reservations about the hosting part.
Yeah.
And Dave's idea, it was his idea, he goes, "Well, Coleman can host it. Mm-hmm. You guys can answer the money questions," because I can't answer the money questions. That's not my bag. And so I got an email one night. I think it was like 5:45. I'm in my kitchen with three kids and my wife. And I remember the sound being on my phone, and I got a ding. And I picked the phone up, and it was from Blake Thompson.
Yeah.
Dave's longtime producer, now our chief executive producer. And it's a forward. And he goes, "FYI." And that's all he said, so I didn't think anything of it. Then I scrolled down, and it's an email from Dave to Blake going, "See if Coleman wants to do it. I think he'll do fine, but if the show flames, we can throw it to a best of really quick." So it was like he trusted me, but he also allowed for the potential that I might wreck the plane.
That's good.
But I'm sitting there reading this, and I show it to my wife. I'll never forget it. And I go, "Babe, will you read this?" And I didn't tell her what it was. She read it, and her eyes got huge. And that was a big moment for me. So the rest of the story is this. So I get all excited about that. And this is probably like 2 weeks before the date that it's going to happen. Okay. That email comes through. And would you believe, and you know Dave well enough to know how special this is, he never asked me for one meeting. He never said, "Hey, come hang out with me for a second. I want to tell you a few things." He never said, "How are you going to open the show?" He never said, "How are you going to close the show?" He never said anything. In fact, I just had a brief conversation with James Childs about it, and I got Dave's clock, and I created my own sheet because I'm super prepared, and I was in the studio 30 minutes before we went live. But I got to tell you, man, he trusted me. There was no conversation. He trusted me to open the show, close the show. It was special, man. So all that to say, I want people to hear that story. Yeah. Because the thing that I love about that is Dave believed in me, and that means the world. I mean, that's a big deal. What is that, 12 million people? I don't know the number. And he just put me in the chair.
And that's his baby. That's what, three years ago?
Oh, my gosh.
So that's 22 years with one voice on the show.
Yeah, I think it was 27 years at the time. 27 years.
Yeah.
Crazy.
My math is bad, but it's not just something he started and say, "Hey, I'm ready to hang." I mean,
no. And we're talking about the third largest radio program in the country. And all of a sudden, these people are tuning in to hear Dave, and they're going to go, "Ken, what? Who's what? Who's where'd the Dave? Wait, this is the Dave Ramsey show?" I mean, you know, it's just amazing if you think about it.
But okay, so as somebody who interacts with these shows and who I've got my finger on the off button on my radio.
Yeah.
If there's a guest host on most of my shows.
Yes, you do.
Because I know what that's like. I know what it's like to find good people. And I know what it's like on the local level. It seems to be that way. So talk to me about the culture that the Dave Ramsey show has created, because over the course of the years, we've seen you with Rachel. We've seen you with Anthony. We've seen Chris and Anthony. We've seen Rachel and Chris.
Yeah.
The show, this has to be intentional. I know how things work around here.
Yeah.
The show sounds like the Dave Ramsey show.
Yeah.
But it shouldn't.
Yeah.
On paper, it shouldn't, but right. It does.
Yeah.
What has gone into that from your vantage point?
Well, I think that, you know, you're stepping into a thing that's really wildly successful. And so it's like, it's like a restaurant that you know what the experience is going to be like, you know? And so if you get hired for this restaurant and you've been to this restaurant before, you know enough about this restaurant and you get hired, they're going to train you and there's going to be some expectations, but you kind of already know. Yeah. What you got to do, and you got to step your game up. That's one. Number two, you know, when I hosted the show, I wasn't answering the money questions. I was just doing the hosting part, because, you know, that's terribly intimidating if you've never done it. And so I'm watching the clock, and I'm taking the calls, and I'm putting them on hold and transitioning in and out and teeing up the other personalities to make sure everything is just smooth. But the fact is that they had all been on before and answered money questions. So the answers were Dave's answers, right? Mm-hmm. It's Dave's methodology. And so, you know, that's why it still sounds like the Dave Ramsey Show, because it's the same calls. It's the same conversation.
Yeah.
You got different people, but the answers aren't different.
So with your show.
Yeah, now that's different.
How do you preserve the brand, respect the template?
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's the Ken Coleman Show.
Yeah. Well, because it's a caller-driven show, the thing that I do preserve, I like how you said that, I preserve the template by going, the reason that the Dave Ramsey Show is on 600 plus stations and is the third largest program in America is because Dave has created a massive amount of trust with the listening audience. They trust him. So when I started, I knew that, and I don't ever forget that. And so that colors everything I do on the show. So number one, how is Dave trustworthy? Well, he's trustworthy because what he says makes sense. He's trustworthy because not only does what he say make sense, he has a clear path that works and has worked. He's trustworthy because he cares for people. Now, Dave's much more of a whack you on the head grandpa, cranky old man, you know. And if he were here, he'd be fine with that. I'm not saying anything he hasn't said.
Yeah.
Whereas my personality is the trusted friend. That's a little bit more me. Now, I'm a straight shooter, but I have my own style. And quite frankly, that's just me being me. If I try to be Dave, people are going to go, oh, this guy's a Dave knockoff. I like what he says. I think his clear path stuff makes sense. But geez, I can't listen to it because he's trying to be Dave, right?
Yeah.
So other than that, it's about being trustworthy. And so number one, I tell the truth. Number two, what I say is making sense. I mean, we hear that. We don't struggle for phone calls. Social media, you ought to see the emails we get. We're really helping people. And then people know I care for them. All you got to do is listen to one phone call that I do.
Sure.
And you're going to know, A, this guy's not making the caller a prop. B, he's really passionate about getting some resolution here. And I can't tell you how many people cry on the show. And it's because there's an intimacy that they have listened to. And so that's I'm just being me, and it's my methodology, and it's my content. But I am using the formula, because in order to win in this format, that has to be the formula.
Sometimes I wonder, as I look at our industry, what the future is. I can't help but think that the future of talk radio, the future of media, is service-oriented.
It is. I actually think you're right. And I will also readily admit that what I'm about to say is not very objective.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to convince folks like you that they need the Ken Coleman Show solely because there is no other show like it that addresses a need as massive as your work and being happy in your job and your career. It's just not. Like, Dave's is money, and that's as big, but it's not bigger.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, you got politics from morning to night, and I think you're right, and I think that's why our show is going to win. And I want to tell you, there's another major reason why too. And I actually pay attention to this stuff, and I don't think radio people are paying attention to this. And I'm hoping to help radio folks pay attention to this. You got to understand that if the format lives, it's going to have to evolve a little bit because of what podcasts have done. Number one, and because of the millennials and Gen Z. Now, millennials are the largest demographic in the workforce right now. Okay. Mm. So they're, by and large, are listening to podcasts, but they'll listen to something in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So radio is not going to die. I don't believe that for a second. I think radio is going to have to evolve. And I think the way it's going to have to evolve is programming. Because I think at some point, Gen X and millennials and Gen Z, which is the 20, they're in the workforce now, they're 20 to 24, and then they're in high school, right? They don't want to listen to the talking heads, be angry. They want to go, how can you help me? Help me. Inform me. Mm-hmm. Equip me. And when you listen to the Ken Coleman show, you won't hear, you can be from any side of the aisle. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And it is heartwarming and uplifting because it speaks to the heart. I'm in the heart business. If somebody said to me, what's your radio show about? I go, it's about the heart. Because every man and woman longs to make a contribution. Everybody does. They all want to matter. And your work is a big part of that. Because the average American spends 90,000 plus hours at work over their lifetime. Hello, I'm on a crusade to help Mondays have some meaning again. I'm on a crusade to help people not just try to make it through to Friday. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's going to change, and I want to be on the forefront of that. Because if you think about it right now, you got politics and Dave Ramsey on the national scene. Now, I'm in 38 markets right now, right? So I'm just, you know, and I'm just a baby in this
game. You're coming.
But I'm going to tell you something. The demographic, I speak to everybody. I mean, you can put 18-year-old to a 58-year-old on our show, and they're listening. And we get calls from all those H-backers. So I do think that that for radio to stay relevant, we're going to have to change the content we offer. Give them some more options. And, of course, Dave, by the way, has proven this. But sure. He's been the only one to really win big outside of politics. Maybe Dr. Laura, sorry.
Well, I would dare say that Dave's show has evolved as well.
Oh, sure.
From, I mean, he's almost your therapist as well on the radio, and people are looking for that. They're looking for, like you say, people to care about me, people to invest in me.
That's the biggest
part
of
my show.
He does
that as well in a different way than you do, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, when I'm helping somebody with, whether they're stuck or scared or confused, at the end of the day, I'm really dealing with fear, doubt, and pride. It's a career or job question.
My notes.
Oh, is it? Well, those are the enemies.
Go for it.
Fear, doubt, and pride. That's what I'm fighting. And you know what's funny is that if you listen to my show, you're just going to hear people calling me going, hey, Ken, I just need to know what you think. Like, I'm the bartender, right? I mean, I'm the hairdresser.
Yeah.
Those are the two positions outside of a talk radio host where people just kind of spill their beans, right? Sitting at the bar and then you're going to spill their beans a little bit and see. Sometimes it's not even to get feedback. Right. I hope you're not looking for feedback from the bartender. But I'm
hairdresser,
the,
maybe.
Hairdresser, yeah. But I'm the person that they can call, and they've listened to me enough that they go, I think Ken's got good sense, and I know Ken's going to ask me questions. He's going to help me see things clearly, right? So I'm half coach,
yeah,
half therapist. Sprinkle 2% a little cheerleader on.
All right, I'm going to whittle this down to three more. I'm not going to keep you.
No, you're fine. I'm having a blast.
I want to pick your brain on this. Work-ministry balance and how those lines are blurred. Some people think, I work and then I minister over here. Or I work in ministry so I'm bitter. Mm. Or I can't do ministry because I'm working too much. And that's always been a gray area for me. I feel like God places us where he places us because he needs a servant in that role.
100% right.
Through the lens of what you do, how would you speak to that?
Well, the world, the secular view of work is that we work to live, right? So we work in order to make money, in order to take care of our basic needs, and then maybe some nice vacations and maybe an extra car or country club membership so we can have some nice memories when this silly little journey is done.
Yeah.
That's the secular view of work. My view of work, unashamedly, is biblical. And I open up every show by going, I always use the word created, and that's the only preaching I'll do. But I believe that we were created to work. Yeah. So therefore, instead of we work to live, I believe we live to work. And our work lives are ministry. So if you work in your sweet spot, which is what I teach, is the intersection of what you do best and what you love to do most. Your contribution to our society and the world at large is, in fact, your ministry. If you are doing what you were created to do. Now, I'm not beating up anybody. That's why I do the show. Come on and call me. All right? I want to help you get in your sweet spot. But if you're not in your sweet spot, It's not ministry, but all work is good. Okay. So, back to your question then. So the way I look at it is I go, listen, ministry is as simple as being who God created you to be and manifesting that in your work life and in your personal life. So I need to be who I was created to be in the workplace, but then I'm not one dimensional. I'm also a husband to Stacy for 21 years, coming up on 22. I've got three kids, Ty, Chase, and Josie. I was created to be a father as well. I got some pals that I do life with really, really closely. And so I'm supposed to be their friend and be a really good friend. I got a brother. I got parents, you know, so I'm multidimensional. So being the best me in my mind is a form of ministry, because when I'm that, people are noticing something different about me. So I like to simplify it. Now, then anything I do outside of those roles that I was created to play is extra, and we should be doing that. So how are you serving at your church? Are you giving monthly to charity, ministry charity, whatever that is? But I wouldn't have this guilt play, because I just think most people don't think of work as really the primary contribution that God put us on the planet to do. And again, you want to dive deep in this, I'll give you a great book to read. I've read it cover to cover. It's on my desk. It's dog-eared and underlined. It's called Every Good Endeavor by Tim Keller. And he makes the biblical case for this. But again, in Genesis, the creator, now I'm preaching, the creator works so hard in 6 days that on the seventh day, God goes, oh man, I need to take a break.
Yeah.
So here's how I put it. Our creator worked. Our creator created us to work. Our creator still works. Yeah. He works through us. So that's my take.
That's good stuff, man.
I've been reading it. I'm fresh off of that.
That Keller book is great. Yeah.
It's a fantastic book. I just finished it 6 weeks ago.
Okay. Your book, The Proximity Principle.
Yeah.
Out now. I got some copies. I need you to sign in my bag. So we're going to give away some to the listeners at the end of this. But one of the stories that really jumped out to me is your clown story. You're turning over every rock. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because I hesitate when people listen to folks like me and they go, oh, they just had it easy.
Right.
And yeah. Ken just, he stepped into this escalator of good fortune and zing. What you're talking about is Sewanee Day. And I think I'm like 33 and I've decided that it's not politics, it's broadcasting. And I've been sitting around for about a year and a half, not doing much. I did some few auditions and I was just getting some no's and it hurt. So I kind of stopped and I started feeling really, really bad about myself. And as I do sometimes, I'm the guy who has the ability, when I'm walking around like a human Eeyore, I start to feel Eeyore and I go, oh, and I can shake myself out of it. Mm. I really can. And so I'm just like, dude, stop moaning and groaning. Nobody's going to do anything for you. You're going to have to do it yourself. So I just decided I'm going to do anything I can. And as I use that analogy, turning over rocks. So I had a connection to the mayor of Sewanee, the town we lived in, a suburb of Atlanta. And long story short, I just made a connection. I said, look, I've done some emceeing of live events before, because I had. And I said, I don't know if you need anybody, but I'd be happy to volunteer. I'm not looking for any money. I just would love to do it. And she was like, well, yeah, hello. I'd love for you to do it. And so I was all excited. I'm going to get some exposure. My name's going to get out there locally. And then I show up on that day and, you know, there's hundreds and hundreds of lawn chairs, but you know, people are moving in and out, food trucks. And so this program starts at noon and it goes till 9 o'clock when I'm supposed to introduce a band. I think it was the Smithereens or something. So I was excited about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I'm going to introduce the Smithereens. And, I mean, it was just pathetic. I mean, nobody was paying attention to anything I was saying. And, I had to introduce a clown who did balloon animals. And then after the clown, about two acts later, I think it was the little girls doing jump and rope. And that was really sweet and all this kind of stuff. And then I had to introduce a mime. And this is the absolute low of my career. he comes up on the stage and I'm not really thinking, you know, like at this point, I'm just trying to survive. And so I go to give him a high five, not thinking this dude's in full mime costume. And so he leaves me hanging with the mime air, you know, high five. And I just felt, and again, I don't think anybody saw it.
Yeah.
But in my mind, everybody saw it. And I looked like a buffoon and I was humiliated. And it was a real low moment. And this was at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And so I'm driving home that night after introducing the Smithereens, and I was down. I was like, what am I doing? I got three beautiful babies. I got a gorgeous wife, and I just blew a Saturday. I'm delusional. What's wrong? I was really, really down and almost emotional. And called one of my mentors, called a good buddy of mine in Seattle, and told him how I felt, and he really encouraged me. And I snapped out of it and then walked in the house. So, you know, those moments happen. And what kept me going is that I decided in that moment in the driveway, I'm willing to keep, you know, humiliating myself to just make some progress. And that's when you know it's passion.
When one of my sports teams wins something of significance, which doesn't happen a lot.
Yeah. Hey.
Chicago fan.
Yeah, yeah, I feel you.
I have found it means so much more if they were on the brink of elimination.
Yeah.
Or if all
that's right.
Hanks across the glass. The Dodgers were up 2-1 on the Cubs in 2016, and the Cubs couldn't score a run. They couldn't.
Yeah.
And I remember the depths of that feeling.
Yeah.
Was what I dwelled on when they won it all that year.
It's absolutely right.
It made it so much nicer that way to have that memory. So I like your clown story because of that concept.
Well, here's a little phrase I tell people. The struggle makes it sweeter. Embrace the struggle. There's an old story, it's been around forever. An old man is walking down a country path and a cocoon catches his, in his peripheral vision, it's moving on a leaf, you know, on a tree, just to the side of the road on a fence post. And so he stops to look closer and he can see that at the bottom of the cocoon, there's a hole and he can see the legs of the butterflies trying to get out. He can see this. So he's fascinated by this, right? As you would be too if you walk up on that. So he just stays there and he's watching this and he's really moved by the fact that he can tell metamorphosis is happening, which, by the way, the Greek word for metamorphosis is transformation. Mm. And so the caterpillar is in the physical act of transforming into a beautiful butterfly, one of God's greatest creations. So he's watching this struggle happen and he sees the legs stop and he gets concerned. Because he knows it's struggling, knows it's trying to get out. And the legs stop. And he looks closer and they begin to kick again. And he can tell it's struggling, so he begins to feel bad. So he takes the cocoon off of the leaf and he gently opens it up so that the butterfly can get out. Well, when he opens it up, to his dismay, the very thing he was trying to do to help the butterfly hurt the butterfly because the butterfly's wings weren't developed yet. And it fell out of the cocoon and on the ground and died minutes later. The struggle.
Yeah.
The struggle in the cocoon is what gives the butterfly the strength to be beautiful. So the struggle is what gives us the strength. And it's what makes the end result so sweet.
Fantastic.
Isn't that good?
Oh, it's good. So I know you, or I know enough about you to know that you, I mean, here we are. Beautiful studio, by the way.
Yeah, I wish I had something to do with it.
Yeah.
I'm very blessed.
But I know that you haven't stopped dreaming and haven't stopped thinking big.
No.
And so without prying, without asking you to dish.
I'm an open book.
What kind of things do you still dream?
Well,
you mentioned TV earlier.
Yeah, well, you know, I dream about helping as many people as possible. So I'm dreaming and we're actually making it happen. I dream of a digital assessment online that does what I do on the air for people. That walks people through their strengths and through their passions and through their values. So what they do best, what they love to do most, what results matter most, helping people come up with a personal vision statement. Vision is where you want to be. Come up with a purpose statement. Purpose is why you want to get there. And then a personal mission statement. And mission is how I'm going to get there. I dream of being on 500, 600 stations, millions on YouTube, television. Why? Because of the message. I want as many people as possible to, in fact, this is really cool. This is, I'm literally going in the trash can below the desk.
Quite literally, yes.
And this is what we read on today's show. This is why I do what I do, and this is what I dream of. millions of what I'm about to read. You can see this. Tell people that's a Facebook post that we just printed out on my Facebook page. And this is from a lady named Aubrey. And I may never meet Aubrey on this earth. I hope I do, but I may never. And this is what she wrote in all caps. Ken, I got my dream job today. 3 exclamation points. The proximity principle plus hard work plus God's providence equals success. I owe a huge thank you to you. Your videos and podcasts picked me up when I was down. And gave me the tools and courage that I needed to be successful. And then she says some other nice things about me. And then I reply to her, this is amazing. You did it. I didn't do it. So, like, that's what I dream about. Like, millions of her. Because the world's a better place when that happens, when people are on fire and they know exactly what they were created to do.
This was a reschedule of a scheduling conflict from October. I'm glad it worked out this way. It was a thrill being here, but I just want to say that you are the epitome of somebody who's walking in their calling. And because you're doing that with such a bright, shining light, the sky's the limit.
Wow. Well,
and so just like being in your presence, I'm getting that vibe, and it'll be extra cheesy here, but that's been a thrill. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's a lot of fun. I mean, this kind of stuff is rewarding. I mean, that's reward. You know what I mean? That's reward. And just imagine how many people she's going to influence, you know? And so that's the thing. That's my thing. It's not everybody's thing, but that's my thing. And when you find that thing, you find that role that you're supposed to play, you start to figure out that's what this journey is about.
We're glad to have you on
Thanks,
Freedom
brother.
95. Let's do this again.
Yeah, anytime, man. I got to get up there.
Yeah.
Next time I'm in Indy, I'll get in there. We'll do the show live from there or something.
We'll have you.
Let's do it.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks, bro.
You've been listening to the Voices of Freedom podcast on Freedom 95. For an audio archive, visit the podcast tab at freedom95.us.